And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, and men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our guests today are Colin Tatz and Paul Tatz. We'll start with Colin. Colin has a PhD in Aboriginal Administration and was Professor of Politics at the University of New England and Macquarie Universities. He's currently a visiting Professor of Politics at the ANU and is the author of 25 books, including Obstacle Race, Aborigines in Sport, and his new book, Black Pearls. Colin, welcome to Dad's on the Air.
Yeah, good day, Bill.
So, Colin, Black Pearls is a beautifully produced compendium of amazing stories about our deserving sports stars. But it's more than that, isn't it? It's an Aboriginal Hall of Fame, and it tells the history as well as the sports.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the history part, because one of the things about sports books like this is that you can get students, especially school students, to take an interest in history that they wouldn't otherwise have. History books can be terribly dull, very uninteresting, very dry. Here is a metaphor, a way, a vehicle of getting students interested. And even those kids who are not really terribly interested in sport, at least they're familiar with the concept of sport. They see it daily on television, radio, newspapers, and so on. So they understand what a footy star is. They understand what a rugby star is. They understand what a tennis champion is. And this way they can relate to the history of Aboriginal people as told through the metaphor of sport.
And it's a little unusual with a Hall of Fame being in the form of a book, isn't it? Don't we normally think of structures?
And I'm glad you raised that one too. Most Halls of Fame are actual buildings or actual walls or actual honours boards. This one is unusual. It's a Hall of Fame on a page. Or on a lot of pages, and it's transportable. It's like a movable museum. And although it could be considered to look a little bit like a very big catalogue, it's not a catalogue. It's actually an encyclopedic museum of some 276 people, about 267 individuals and 9 teams. And it covers a period of 166 years of history. So in that sense, it's a museum.
Yes, you begin your history of Aboriginal and Islander sports stars with when the British arrived. Who was the first Aboriginal player to succeed in Western sport?
Well, it's very interesting. In around about the 1830s, we have a reference to a guy called Shiny, S-H-I-N-Y, or Shinell, A-L at the end, who made 3 ducks in a row in Hobart Town. But he's renowned not for that dismal cricket performance, but because on his death, an Irish surgeon in Hobart beheaded him and sent his head to an Irish museum. And it took until 1992 for the Aboriginal Tasmanians to get that body part returned and buried ceremoniously in one of the local rivers at Risdon Cove. So, yeah, that's the sort of first mention. But the first real mention of Aboriginal sport is something we're celebrating in England at the moment, and that is the anniversary of the 1868 cricket team that went to England 10 years before any white Australian team went abroad. A bunch of Aboriginal cricketers from Western Victoria, round about the Eden Hope and Harrow area, were employed as servants on a cattle station, and because the owners were cricket mad, they had no one else to play against, so they trained their serfs to play the game, and they were so good at it, this resulted in a commercial tour to England in 1868. So that's really where the book begins.
Yes, your book is really a celebratory tome, but it does have these dark spots, doesn't it, with these terrible stories like you just mentioned about the first Aboriginal cricketer.
Yeah, look, the book has got a lot of good and a lot of bad and a lot of ugly in it. It's and while it's a celebratory book, it makes it very clear that we are very far from a state of wellness in things Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander and South Sea Islander. The first chapter is a fairly vigorous swipe at both Liberal and Labor governments in the last century and in this century. We still have an enormous way to go, and yet one of the important things that comes across in the book is we've divided the sports people into eras. So we look at the people who played during the genocidal era, the people who played in the era when they were locked away on isolated reserves and incommunicado with the rest of the community. We look at the period of stolen generations of children. We look at the forced assimilation era, and you get some lovely stories there. For example, the Redfern All Blacks rugby league team, founded in 1944, because the New South Wales government at the time was determined to assimilate all kids and removed all Aboriginal lads and sent them out to country towns to be indentured and apprenticed without wages as a way of sort of pepper potting the population across the state. And there was a resistance to this, and the Redfern All Blacks is one symbol of resistance, where they form an All Blacks rugby team, which still exists and still wins dozens of competitions and so on. Somebody needs to write that story. So, yeah, there are some very dark spots, but you're right. In one sense, it's a celebration in the face of adversity.
And it is important to, in order to appreciate properly the achievements of the Aboriginal and Islander people, by considering what they've had to fight against, isn't it?
Absolutely, and not only did they have to fight racial discrimination, legal discrimination, economic discrimination, political discrimination, social discrimination, they had to beat their opponents as well. So, tough times, and so the achievements are doubly remarkable or triply remarkable in the face of what had to be overcome. And a lot of the players in the book, you'll notice when you look through the little biographies of each one of the entrants there, how many of them died in their 20s and early 30s. Many of them achieved incredible feats of athleticism while suffering from tuberculosis, which most of them at that time died of. And, tuberculosis was a disease of poverty, lack of water, lack of proper food, and lack of proper sanitation, and so on.
Colin, this has been a major part of your life for a long time, and you started the research in 1988, I think. But
My research on Aborigine started in 1961 when I came from South Africa, but the sports thing began in 1988 when a lot of Aboriginal friends said to me, "We're not going to participate in the bicentenary because we've got nothing to celebrate." And I said, "Oh, yes, you have. You've got all these sports achievers." And they said, "Where?" And it fell to me, a South African academic, to sort of pull together and produce the first little book called Aborigines in Sport in 1988. It was just a rough sketch, and it's blossomed into the volume that we're talking about today.
It's perhaps an unlikely combination, but it's a magnificent piece of work. It is a beautiful book with magnificent photos and a monument. So congratulations on producing such a wonderful book.
Thank you very much, Bill.
So, Colin, we've reached this part of the program where we ask our guests if they'd like to pick a song. Would you like to tell us which one you picked and why?
When I was a little boy, we used to, there were no CDs, and there were just not even vinyl records. There were shellac 78 records. And one of my favorites was a black American quartet called the Ink Spots. And one of their songs in particular struck me and always has struck me, called We Three. And I used that in the front piece of my memoir, which I wrote in 2015. I think the book's called Human Rights and Human Wrongs, A Life Confronting Racism. And We Three is my echo, my shadow, and me. And I was a lonely child, and an alone child. And in one sense, that resonated with me. There was just me and my echo and my shadow. And there are a lot of shadows in my life. And, of course, the South African upbringing was clearly a very dark shadow on my life.
We three, we're all alone, living in a memory. My echo, my shadow, and me. We three, we're not a crowd. We're not even company. My echo, my shadow, and me. What good is the moonlight, the silvery moonlight that shines above? I walk with my shadow, I talk with my echo, but where is the one I love? We three will wait for you, even till eternity. My echo, my shadow, and me.
We three, we're all alone. Seem like we're living in a memory. That's my echo, my shadow, and me. We three, we ain't no crowd. Fact is, we ain't even company. That's my echo, my shadow, and me. You know, I've been wondering, what good is the moonlight? That silvery moonlight that shines way, way up above. Yeah, I walk with my shadow, I talk with my echo, but where is that gal that I love?
We three will wait for you, even till eternity. My echo, my shadow, and me.
And that was We Three, My Echo, My Shadow, and Me by the Inkspots, and it was specially chosen for us today by our guest, Colin Tatz. Colin, just remains for me to thank you very much for being on the program, and we wish you all the best with the book and with your work in this important area.
Thank you very much, Bill. Much appreciated. Bye now.
We're Dads on the Air. We're back with Dads on the Air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air in our special program today, where we have a double header. And our special guest now is Paul Tatz. Paul studied as a professional photographer at the Sydney School of Arts, and he's the co-author of several books with Colin Tatz: Black Diamonds, Black Gold, the Aboriginal and Islander Sports Hall of Fame, and most recently, Black Pearls, the Aboriginal and Islander Sports Hall of Fame in 2018. Paul, welcome to Dads on the Air.
Yeah, thank you.
I must compliment you on the quality of this book that you've produced. It really is a beautiful production and magnificent photos, which I'm sure you appreciate.
Yeah, look, it took a while to source many of those photos, and they're very precious photos from people, most a lot from people's private collections. But some of the media have been very helpful with us in updating some of the pictures.
So I'm wondering what the criteria were for getting into the Sports Hall of Fame. I mean, I think you've now got some 276 members.
That's right. Some are teams, so there's I think there's 10 teams out of those 276, so there's technically a lot more members. Look, the criteria was twofold. It was the sporting achievement in the era that they represented, and a lot of this is historical, so bear in mind that the access to cricket pitches and boxing rings and so forth 100 years ago was a lot more difficult than it is now. The other criteria was basically the contribution to Aboriginality, and a lot of the sports achievers in this book, their statistics might not be technically better than a fellow Aboriginal competitor, but they've put a lot back into the sport, into Indigenous youth, into education, into programs that have helped families and children and communities, you know, get back on their feet.
And I'm intrigued with the title. I mean, first of all, black. I assume that Aboriginal and Islander people have no objection these days to being called black as a general term?
I guess it depends how it's used. Look, I feel like it is an endearing term these days. I think there is a difficulty. We ran into a difficulty with this book in terms of terminology. We don't like using the word Aboriginal as a noun. I think it's wrong and that it's not really used as a noun. We prefer the word Aborigine, but in contemporary society, Indigenous has replaced a lot of things, and Indigenous is a vague term. More correctly, I think a lot of black fellas, and I happily use that word, and it's said with affection, prefer their regional or state terminology, as like in Murray or Koori or Noongar, and that even gets broken down even further. But never heard I've never encountered an Aboriginal person that doesn't like the term black fella when it's used appropriately.
Yes. And well, the other part is the title Black Pearls. I mean, when I hear the word pearl, I always think of one sportsman in particular, Steve Renoff for the...
Exactly. Yeah. So, look, it was Colin's idea that we started with the black diamonds. And look, it was a nice theme to stay on because it is kind of the apotheosis of achievement or of quality. Black gold, which has that affiliation with oil, I suppose, and black diamonds are a rarity, and a black pearl is something that is so utterly rare and beautiful. And I think the titles work very well.
Look, it's a book of stories, and I think stories are very important to everybody, and particularly, I guess, in the Aboriginal and Islander community. But do you have any favourites you could tell us about?
No, look, this is one of my feelings of a little bit of a failure with telling the stories. That because it's a book of achievements and there's so many achievers in there, I mean, apart from the 276 that are in the hall, there are literally probably another 1,000 or so mentioned there. And each one has an amazing story. And these stories are profound. They're not just about how many goals somebody kicked or how many tries they scored or what distances they jumped in, or you know, how many sets they won. They're part of broader stories, and the stories are about the kinship, the family, the situation that the achievers grew up in, and everyone is unique. And the stories actually need to be told in a much finer context with more detail. And unfortunately, it was interesting at the book launch, I ran into David Middleton, who's the rugby league historian and statistician and has been for about the last 30 years. And it's his job to provide statistics. And we had a chat afterwards and he gave me a beautiful, I'll quote him. He said, you know, statistics are just the scaffold on which you build the stories on. Now, this is coming from a statistician and he's so dead right that you only see a very small part of the picture of a person's achievements, of how they got there, especially in the Aboriginal context, because a lot of them had to work doubly, triply hard to get there. They came from very specific circumstances. very unique to them, to their people, to their tribal affiliation group. And all their stories are fascinating. It's only now, we were doing a recce just before the book launch, and we calculated out of all those achievers in the book, there's only 14 have had bios, proper bios done on them. And of those 14 bios, they're not particularly good. They're either hagiographical or co-authored by the sports person who wants to tell their story in the way they want to tell it. And it's only just now that we're getting some beautiful insights into the complete social, political, familial circumstances that these people have grown up in, and how they got to their place. And just currently on SBS on NITV, a guy called Harry Bardwell is doing a series called Noongar Footy Magic, and it's about the southwestern Western Australian AFL players who've achieved greatness. And the way he is telling the stories with graphics, with pictures, with interviews, is the way these stories need to be told. And the other very worthy mention on that front is, I think it was a Sydney Morning Herald journalist, a guy called John Ellicott, published a book about 5 years ago called Uncommon Heroes, which are just rugby league stories. And in two of them, he goes into that fine detail and nuance of the lives of Nathan Blacklock growing up with Preston Campbell in Tinga, the little remote town of Tinga, and what life in Tinga was like. And a beautiful one on Kevin Longbottom, the South Sydney fullback and goal kicker, and his life growing up in the 50s and 60s in La Perouse. And it's a terrific insight into Aboriginal life in small town, in a communal township. Yeah, and this is the way these stories need to be told, and that's the way I would like to see these stories told. And if this book starts a proliferation of people actually going into depth and telling these stories, then that'd be great.
Now, you're two white fellows doing all this research. What's the reception been like from the Aboriginal and Islander community?
It's been very good. It's been terrific, in fact. And I think Colin's legacy of having worked in Aboriginal affairs since 1961 and being a pioneer in Aboriginal health and politics for so long has endeared him greatly to the communities. And we've found access not a problem at all. In fact, it's been warm. It's been, people want to tell their stories. They want to tell the stories of their relatives. They want Australia and the world to see who they are as people, what they've endured, how they've suffered, how they've managed to overcome a lot of obstacles, hence the title Obstacle Race for the earlier book.
We're speaking today with Paul Tatz, a co-author of this magnificent new book called Black Pearls. Paul, we've reached the part of the program where we ask our guests to pick a song. Would you like to tell us which one you've picked?
It's a Hungarian guitarist called Gabo Szabo. And the track's called Galatea's Guitar. Comes from his Dreamer album. It's 1969. And it was a track that really changed my notion of music. It was the way he comes from a jazz background, but also a gypsy jazz background. And he also is a very proficient flamenco guitarist. And the way he combines style and sound and puts it all together was an eye-opener for me many years ago when I came across this album, and it changed the musical direction I went in.
Thank you.
And that was Galatea's Guitar by Gabo Szabo, specially chosen for us today by our guest Paul Tatz. So it just remains for me now to thank you, Paul. Thank you very much for being a guest on Dad's on the Air.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, send us an email and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dad's on the Air.